It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama sending 300 U.S. military advisors to Iraq. NATO chief says Russia has resumed troop buildup on Ukrainian border. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. President Barack Obama says he is prepared to send more equipment and up to 300 U.S. advisors to help the Iraqi government in its fight against Islamist militants. Speaking at the White House, Mr. Obama said the U.S. war in Iraq that began in 2003 left big scars. He ruled out sending U.S. ground forces back into Iraq, but he said is ready to take what he calls targeted military action as necessary, leaving the door open for possible airstrikes against Sunni militants.
In recent days, we've positioned additional U.S. military assets in the region. Because of our increased intelligence resources, we're developing more information about potential targets associated with ISIL. And going forward, we will be prepared to take targeted and precise military action if and when we determine that the situation on the ground requires it. If we do, I will consult closely with Congress and leaders in Iraq and in the region. I want to emphasize, though, that the best and most effective response to a threat like ISIL will ultimately involve partnerships where local forces, like Iraqis, take the lead.
Mr. Obama is sending Secretary of State John Kerry to the Middle East and Europe for talks with U.S. allies. The head of NATO says Russia has resumed a troop buildup along its border with Ukraine as Ukraine's president announced that he will sign an association agreement with the European Union. NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen said in Brussels that at least a few thousand more Russian troops had been deployed in what he said was a new Russian military buildup around the Ukrainian border. He called it a very regrettable step backwards.
We call on Russia to stop the support for pro-Russian armed gangs in eastern Ukraine. And in general, we call on Russia to stop destabilizing the situation in eastern Ukraine and engage in a constructive manner with the political leadership in Kiev.
The Secretary General was in London meeting with British Prime Minister David Cameron.
Russia needs to take a series of actions to stop weapons crossing the border, to make sure that so-called separatists are not getting support, and to make sure they contribute to the stability of the Ukraine rather than undermine it.
Up to 40,000 Russian troops were deployed near the border with Ukraine, but NATO reported last month that they had been withdrawn from the area. Kenyan officials say security forces have shot dead 5 people suspected of involvement in deadly attacks that killed more than 60 people in a coastal town earlier this week. The Kenyan Interior Ministry said the 5 suspects were killed while escaping. It said several guns and some ammunition were recovered at the scene. Earlier this week, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta rejected claims that Somali militants were behind the attacks. The United States has canceled a regional military exercise in Uganda, cutting funding to the African nation and taken other punitive measures in response to a new law that outlaws homosexuality. The Obama administration announced Thursday that the measures are targeted at those responsible for abuses related to the anti-gay law, as well as against Ugandan officials guilty of significant public corruption. Former Liberian President Charles Taylor has asked to be moved out of a jail in Britain where he is serving a 50-year sentence for war crimes. Lawyers for Taylor say he has appealed to be transferred to Rwanda because his imprisonment in Britain unlawfully prevents him from receiving visits from his family in Africa. Taylor is appealing to the UN-backed tribunal in The Hague. In World Cup soccer, Colombia earned a 2-1 win over Ivory Coast. Greece and Japan battled to a scoreless draw that qualified Colombia for the round of 16. And in a Group D match, Uruguay kept its round of 16 hopes alive with a 2-1 win over England. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda accuses the U.S. of blackmail as the U.S. imposes sanctions for Uganda's anti-gay law.
Uganda is a sovereign country. Our parliament is a sovereign parliament, and we should be allowed to make laws and make decisions that we think are in our interest.
Of Wando Opondo is Ugandan government spokesman. A UN report says thousands are fleeing Eritrea in desperation. Malawi's new president is getting married tomorrow Saturday, and Mauritanians go to the polls tomorrow Saturday to elect a president.
Mauritanians have a choice of five presidential candidates, including incumbent president Mohamed Ould Abdel Aziz. His two main challengers are a prominent anti-slavery activist and the country's second-ever female presidential candidate, both running as independents.
That's correspondent Jennifer Lasuta from our West Africa Bureau in Dakar. Today is World Refugee Day, and we'll tell you who Amnesty International said is to blame for the worldwide refugee crisis. And poachers have killed two well-known Kenyan elephants. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Uganda's government says his country will not be blackmailed into changing its anti-homosexual law. Of Wando Opondo says Uganda is a sovereign country with an independent parliament, and it should be allowed to make laws that are in the interest of its citizens. This comes after the United States on Thursday announced it will impose sanctions on Uganda for its anti-gay law. National Security Council spokeswoman Caitlin Hedin said Ugandan officials involved in human rights abuses, including against the gay community, will be denied entry into the United States. Government spokesman Opondo tells me Uganda's constitution does not recognize homosexuality as a human rights issue.
First of all, the United States government has not formally notified the government of Uganda. We are getting it through the media, and we think that is improper. Uganda cannot compel the United States to give us their money. We shall make do with the resources that we have. If they choose to withhold their support to the various government programs that they were funding, either directly or indirectly. Uganda is a sovereign country. Our parliament is a sovereign parliament, and we should be allowed to make laws and make decisions that we think are in our interest.
The United States says that the issue of homosexuality is a human rights issue, and it will do everything to defend human rights.
How does withdrawing support for Uganda help the cause of the so-called human rights the United States government is seeking to defend or to protect? We think it is simply a blackmail. We have stated before that homosexuality is not a fundamental human right. In our own constitution, it is not guaranteed as a fundamental right. But even if it were, and the government of Uganda was offending those rights, there are democratic, legitimate platforms through which the United States government can engage the government of Uganda. But we reject the blackmail by the United States government.
The problem with the Uganda anti-homosexual laws is that it criminalizes, it makes it a crime for you to be a homosexual. That's a human rights issue.
Well, there's no provision which says a criminal law cannot be challenged through our courts of law or even through our parliament. If the United States government is what it claims to be, that it believes in the rule of law, it believes in the judicial system, it believes in justice, then it should be able to use our parliamentary democratic platform or our judicial system to challenge this law.
There are those who say that because President Yoweri Museveni signed the law, he should not be allowed to attend the U.S.-Africa summit that is coming up in August. What do you think?
Well, those are matters that can be addressed through the diplomatic channel. But we think the United States government should use that summit to engage the president of Uganda through diplomatic channel rather than blackmail. Preventing President Museveni from attending the summit does not in any way counter the validity of the law passed by Uganda. So we think continuous engagement is much better than blackmail.
Of Wando Opondo is spokesman for Uganda's government. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Voters in Mauritania go to the polls tomorrow, Saturday, to vote in presidential elections that are widely expected to return President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz to office. But as Jennifer Lazuta reports from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar, the opposition remains hopeful.
Mauritanians have a choice of five presidential candidates, including incumbent President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz. His two main challengers are a prominent anti-slavery activist and the country's second-ever female presidential candidate, both running as independents. Bouidiel Oud Houmid, a member of a loyalist-backed party of former President Maya Oud Taya, and Ibrahim Mokhtar Sarr, a black African who won 5% of the vote in the 2009 election, are also contenders. The country's leading opposition coalition is boycotting the poll, claiming a lack of transparency and vote rigging. President Aziz, a former army general who took power during a 2008 military coup, was officially elected in 2009. He is running on the platform that Mauritania is a better place today than it was before he took office. He says the country is more safe today than 5 years ago. There are no more terrorist cells and there are no political prisoners. So this means we have a democracy. President Aziz is considered by many Western countries to be a key ally in the fight against Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists in the region. He has also claimed responsibility for the country's recent economic growth. But one of Mr. Aziz's top rivals, Biram Ulda Ould Abid, says that it is time for a change, particularly when it comes to addressing Mauritania's ongoing problem of modern-day slavery. As a self-prescribed defender of human rights, Mr. Abid has promised to protect and promote the poor and the marginalized. He says the election is a battle between two ideologies, between that of human rights, equality, and freedom, and that of the real Islam. He says we are fighting against those ideologies that have bullied people into a lifestyle of slavery, and against those who make a fortune on human exploitation. The sole female candidate, Lala Miriam Mintmoulay Idris, is promising to make women and children a priority while improving the country's agriculture and fishing sectors. She has become a favorite with many female voters. Aissatou Salam, a resident of Nouakchott, says she believes Mauritania could use a female leader. She says women represent 52% of the population, and it is time for us to take power. If no one candidate wins 50% of the vote on Saturday, runoff elections are scheduled to take place on July 5th. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
Today, June 20th, is World Refugee Day, and Amnesty International says the UN Security Council's failures have caused millions across the world to flee. According to Amnesty, the Security Council's delayed responses to ongoing conflicts in Syria, South Sudan, Central African Republic, and Iraq have allowed violence to grow. Sharif El-Sayed Ali is head of Refugee and Migrants for Amnesty International. He explains to Ricky Stryak how the UN has failed refugees across the world.
It is just not doing its job properly. It is unable to do it because of the veto that certain members have been using in different occasions. And at the end of the day, one of the crucial things about refugee crisis is that they are mostly generated by conflicts. And so the inability of Security Council to fulfill its mandate is really contributing to the huge displacements that we're seeing across the world now.
Specifically, Amnesty addresses the delayed deployment of UN peacekeepers to the Central African Republic. Those peacekeepers still have not been deployed, and it's been well over a year since the current conflict in CAR began. What do you think could have been done differently at the Security Council level in order to deploy the peacekeepers sooner?
They should have taken the situation more seriously and understood the risks and the not only the risks but the atrocities that are happening on the ground, the people that are being killed, being displaced. There were the French peacekeepers that were there from under Security Council mandate late last year. There were peacekeepers from African countries as well. But what happened and what our team saw when they were in the Central African Republic is that there were many occasions where attacks were happening or were known to be about to happen, but the peacekeepers were just not moving because not moving fast enough because there were not enough of them. They were not able to respond properly.
But again, these weren't UN peacekeepers, correct? They were French peacekeepers. There are African Union peacekeepers. Now there are some EU peacekeepers. But still, the UN peacekeeping troops have not been deployed still.
Not the UN peacekeeper troops, but the French peacekeeping troops were operating under UN mandate.
Since it is World Refugee Day on June 20th, What is the state of, let's specifically take CAR, what are the numbers looking at like now, both internally and externally displaced?
There's a little bit over 560,000 displaced internally in the Central African Republic, which represent about 12% of the population. There's also a little over 350,000 displaced externally as refugees in other countries. Some of them were from displaced before this year. But we know that the humanitarian demands are not being met. The funding appeal for the Central African Republic is severely underfunded.
Sherif Alseya Ali is head of refugee and migrants for Amnesty International. We're speaking to Ricky Shryak from London. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, June 20th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. A UN investigator says about 4,000 Eritreans are fleeing the country every month to escape indefinite national service, arbitrary arrest, and other persistent violations of their human rights. The investigator, who submitted her second report to the UN Human Rights Council, says the situation in Eritrea has deteriorated since her last report last year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Statistics may not tell the whole story, but they are revealing. Last year, about 2,000 people fled Eritrea every month in search of asylum. That number now has doubled. The UN Human Rights Investigator for Eritrea, Sheila Kitarut, calls this 50% spike shocking.
It shows the level of despair. Hope is outside, even if it is very difficult in terms of, death in the desert or drowning at sea. What is shocking also is that people know those risks. And it's like we take it because there is no other choice.
The UN Refugee Agency reports 13,000 Eritreans have arrived in Italy by boat since the beginning of the year, accounting for 32% of all arrivals in the European country. What is pushing Eritreans to leave in droves is the pervasive and brutal abuse of their rights. In her report, Kitarut reports Eritreans are subject to disappearances, torture, arbitrary arrests, and long periods of incommunicado detention in inhuman prison conditions. She says people above all are fleeing to escape the country's system of national service.
Originally, it was meant for 18 months, and at the moment it has become an indefinite situation where people are conscripted for 14, 15, 20 years, from the age of 18 up to 50 years, indefinite national service.
The UN investigator cites what she calls guilt by association, as the families of those who flee are punished by having to pay a fine or by being detained. She says detention centers are severely overcrowded and are often underground cells or shipping containers which are extremely hot. She warns Eritrea could soon be a country without people inside and an ever-growing diaspora spread around the world. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Malawi's newly elected head of state is set to get married tomorrow, Saturday. Peter Mukito, co-chairman of the Presidential Wedding Organizing Committee, says President Peter Mutharika will wed his longtime fiancée, Gertrude Maseko, a former parliamentarian, at a private ceremony. Mukito tells reporter Peter Clotty that the couple and some of their well wishes are expected to fund the wedding.
The bill is being footed by the president himself and some well wishers. In fact, His Excellency has directed that no government money should be used on this wedding. And as I'm talking to you, we have subcommittees which are actually doing the planning of the wedding. Everything is going on, and we have already just followed the directive from the president that no government money should be used on this. So it's a purely personal money from the president himself and the well-wishers who are actually donating a little something from both the president and also his intended spouse. That's where we are getting the funding from.
During the election campaigning period, some people started speculating that the president could have been gay. What can you tell me about this?
I think those remarks came from those ill-minded commentators. The truth is the president was once married, and that those children came from his previous marriage. What they want to do is to formalize and set a good example, bringing in the first lady for the nation. So that's exactly what the president is trying to do.
Who are the invited guests that will grace the occasion? And as you said, the president has ordered that no money from the state should be used in organizing this event. Wouldn't the Malawi Broadcasting Corporation or state media cover this? And wouldn't it be using state resources to cover this event?
The actual running of this wedding, as I already indicated, that there are subcommittees, the protocol, the transport, the food and accommodation, all these committees are the ones that are planning for the wedding. And the money that they are going to use, including the food that will be provided at this function, is purely not coming from the government. Now, there is indeed a thin line between the president and the private life. So it could be that as a president, there could be others that will come in to services, their normal services, to their state president. But what I'm talking about is the actual planning, the actual execution, and the wedding itself, all the items that will actually be enjoyed on this wedding. We have foreign dignitaries, high commissioners, the local Malawians, and the people that actually comes from the surrounding villages of the Kamoto, where the president comes from, are all invited to this wedding.
Peter Mukito is co-chairman of Malawi President Peter Mutharika's wedding organizing committee. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. Two well-known Kenyan bull elephants have been killed by poachers. The African Wildlife Foundation says the elephants had survived the poaching wars of the 1970s and 80s and were revered in Kenya. VOA's Jody Kapwa reports.
The two male elephants were brutally killed in May. Their carcasses were discovered in Mount Kenya and Tsavo National Parks. Satao was believed to be Kenya's largest elephant. The other was named Mountain Bull. Both were so-called large tuskers. African Wildlife Foundation Vice President Greg Shally explains why the elephants were held in such high esteem.
These are tuskers that are probably 6 tons, 12,000 pounds. Their tusks individually weigh in excess of 100 to 150 pounds. And when you're in the presence of one of these big animals, it really is a special experience.
The elephants were killed despite Mountain Bull having his tusks partially removed and Satao's movements monitored by air patrols.
If, in fact, poachers are able to get to these two elephants, elephants that are pretty regularly monitored by Kenya Wildlife Service and rangers, then there are a few elephants on the continent that are safe, and that's very, very scary. We've probably lost 35,000 elephants a year over the course of the last couple of years. This is just a horror, a genocide that's occurring on the African continent.
Shally says it will take an international approach to end the poaching of elephants, rhinos, and other endangered animals.
Obviously, each and every country in Africa has got to take a look at its elephant population and try to determine exactly what can be done. Boots on the ground is part of the effort, and so just ensuring that you've got the appropriate ranger force, that they've got the appropriate weaponry, that they've got the appropriate technology, that's a really, really important step.
He says poaching is driven by organized crime, and the proceeds are often used to fund terror groups, drug smugglers, and human traffickers.
Wildlife trafficking is a multi-billion dollar business at this particular point. It's important to understand that the folks who are out there poaching are underwritten by folks with a lot of money and a lot of incentive.
Ivory and rhino horns are usually smuggled to China, Vietnam, and other countries in the region. The animal products may be used in traditional medicines or as status symbols. Anti-poaching media campaigns are underway in China, using basketball star Yao Ming and martial arts great Jackie Chan. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Post. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Midfielders James Rodriguez and Juan Quintero scored before Gervas Yao Cusi, popularly known as Gervino, pulled one back as Colombia edged Ivory Coast 2-1 in Group C action in Brasilia on Thursday. Later, Japan and Greece drew 0-0 in Natal. Consequently, Colombia lead the group and qualify for the knockout stage. Ivory Coast is second, Japan third, and Greece is fourth. In Group D, Uruguay edged England 2-1. With their second loss, England's World Cup campaign ends with their last group fixture next week. Meanwhile, Cameroon's dismal performance at the ongoing World Cup raises questions beyond the playing field. Talking to my colleague James Batty, a former editor for the Cameroon Herald newspaper, Franklin Bayern explains.
Certainly there will be new blood. You saw some of them already in the team. You saw Salih Edgar, you saw Benjamin Mukanjo. There are even some older players who still have a place in the team. But I think this problem is not all about the team. I think it goes beyond that to the whole management setup of Cameroonian football. There is something really wrong with the way football is managed in Cameroon, between the Ministry of Sport and the Football Federation, within the Federation itself, between the Federation, the Ministry of Sport, and the higher authorities like the Presidency of the Republic. There is a lot of interference that doesn't permit for just football to be done. I think that the whole scope of things need to be looked into if really Cameroon intend to continue to be a footballing nation, because after 2010 we thought that we were going to look into this and get this behind us. But for this to repeat itself and even get worse 4 years afterwards, I think that we need a stop and we need to take a deep, deep look down into our books and into our minds and decide if we want to continue playing football. It goes beyond the players. It's also about the way the team is managed.
That was Franklin Bayern, former editor of the Cameroon Herald newspaper, speaking in Yaounde, Cameroon. Back in Brazil, Italy play Costa Rica, Switzerland face France as Honduras engage Ecuador today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Argentina tackle Iran, Germany engage Ghana, and Nigeria play Bosnia-Herzegovina. On Sunday, Belgium play Russia, South Korea and Algeria clash as the United States of America engage Portugal. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Our listener mail for this Friday morning comes from Aliou Sano of Juba, South Sudan. He says, "Dear VOA, I've been monitoring the call by Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki for America to intervene in the country's conflict by bombarding the positions of the Sunni rebels. I think it would be a grave mistake for America to honor that request, because I think it is the responsibility of Mr. Maliki to govern the entire Iraq, including the rebel stronghold. But if America intervenes, then America should stop threatening Russia with sanctions over the Ukrainian crisis." We thank you, Aliou Sano of Juba, South Sudan, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United States has canceled a regional military exercise in Uganda, cut funding to the African nation, and taken other punitive measures in response to a new law that outlaws homosexuality. The Obama administration announced Thursday that the measures are targeted at those responsible for abuses related to the anti-gay law, as well as against Ugandan officials guilty of significant public corruption. That's it for this Friday, June 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. And then we thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporter Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a lovely weekend, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga.
Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.